Hello, my name is Charlie Moores, and you're about to listen to a short conversation between me and my off-the-leash colleague, Dominic Dyer, about the Queen's speech and animal welfare. So, yesterday, May the 10th, the Queen's speech, which sets out the government's legislative agenda for the next parliamentary year, was given in the House of Lords. It was, according to most commentators, a bland affair, a mix of new plans, long-made pledges, and a handful of held-over bills. On animal welfare legislation, though, it was universally slammed, with promises broken and pledges abandoned. The government did say that it is still committed to legislation to ban the import of hunting trophies, with the Secretary of State for DEFRA, George Eustace, quoted by senior Conservative MP Sir Roger Gale, saying that it will go ahead and be tougher than the manifesto commitment. But the government has cancelled the flagship Animals Abroad bill that would have outlawed trade in fur, stopped advertisers promoting exploitative animal events like elephant rides, and banned the import of foie gras, reportedly because MPs like Jacob Rees-Mogg said it was unconservative to restrict choice. And in the latter case, by that he means his choice to eat foie gras, rather than the choice of geese not to be force-fed grain until their livers explode. Anyway, the Queen's speech, Dominic. A disaster for animal welfare, planned changes sunk at the behest of right-wing Conservatives, or a mixed bag that is salvageable before the next general election?
I think it's a wake-up moment, really. I'd call it a betrayal of trust. I think there's most definitely that. You know, we went back to 2019 when Boris Johnson became Prime Minister and stood on the steps of Downing Street and put animal welfare commitments into his opening speech, which was no doubt down to a degree to his partner at the time, who's now his wife, Carrie Johnson, but it was clearly there and it was a statement of intent. He's thrown it all under a bus, basically. You know, the commitments he has made or this government have put forward in animal welfare, wildlife protection at home and abroad, within the sort of strategies published by DEFRA, and pushed by ministers like Goldsmith and supported, we believed, by the Prime Minister, have largely come to nothing. And I think the Queen's speech yesterday, the fact that there were 38 bills in that speech and there was no room for the Animals Abroad bill, which contains clear commitments on the banning of import of wild animal trophies, on the ending of the sale of foie gras, on the fur trade, on introducing, you know, measures looking at stricter advertising standards for animals that are exploited within tourism, including elephant rides and things, is a sign that the government, no matter what public opinion is saying, basically is not willing to go forward with this any longer. And that's down to the fact that the Prime Minister had to placate largely right-wing MPs that he's now relying upon on the backbenches for his political survival. So yeah, I think it's a sad day. It's a sad day indeed.
That comment reportedly from Rees-Mogg that it was unconservative to pass that because he thought it restricted choice. I mean, that's just nonsensical.
I think there's a lot of things going on at the moment. The government is in a precarious position, but there's no clear sign that the opposition are ready to make a breakthrough either.
No.
The best we can hope for in an election, if it comes next year, and it could well come next year or the year after, it has to come the year after, is that the government might lose its majority, in which case, you know, an opposition can be formed from the Labour, Liberal Democrats and the SNP. That's the only logical conclusion you can reach. But the question is, what will the SNP, Liberal Democrats and Labour do now that the Tories have clearly dropped the ball on animal welfare and wildlife protection? Will they pick it up? Will they say, if this government has failed on its commitments, we will offer a clear plan where we will deliver on them? I would say they definitely should do that, particularly if they want to gain votes on it. But I haven't seen much sign of commitment from them at the moment. But the Conservatives, I think, are largely a busted flush now. They might salvage something. I know that you've had Sir Roger Gale, and God bless him. I do have a lot of time for him. He's a, you know, lone voice to a large degree in the Conservative Party at the moment, pushing for animal welfare issues. And he's been led to believe, George Eustace, as you know, spoke at the HSI reception only a few weeks ago in Parliament to commit to the ban on wild animal trophies, that it
would happen. Where he claimed he was an animal welfare champion in front of all of us,
I think there's more to the wild animal trophies issue than it not being in the Queen's speech. I think it's been derailed, and it's been derailed over a period of time. That could partly be, in my view, down to the fact that there's a broader discussion been going on about the so-called economic benefits of trophy hunting, which I don't agree with, but it's an argument that has been increasingly posed to the government about the fact that if they stop the import of wild animal trophies, they're going to prevent income coming to local communities and protecting biodiversity in certain parts of Africa and other parts of the world. that largely doesn't stack up, that argument, but I do think it's something that the NGOs have campaigned and campaign groups who've campaigned for trophy hunting should have probably dealt with more effectively. And one way of doing that, I think, would be to say to the government, if you introduce a ban on trophy hunting, you must have a package of economic measures that go alongside it to help, you know, people in the countries where you're preventing trophies coming in, to offer alternative sources of income, to protect local communities and protect wildlife and biodiversity. And that's really a more effective, targeted use of our huge foreign aid budget. So that can be done. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
But the government would need to do that in tandem with a ban. And that would have smoked out some of these academic voices that you're familiar with that constantly come out going, I hate trophy hunting, but there's no alternative. Yes, there is an alternative. It can be made to work, but it does need a certain amount of financing, the community question of that. So I do think there's a more difficult issue on the trophy hunting ban. And I think the fact it's not in the Queen's speech probably to a degree reflects that. And I think the idea that it's suddenly going to be sort of picked up, you know, in a supplementary bill, it's going to be tougher than originally proposed, and it's going to be put through the statute books and, you know, made law before the end of this parliament, I just think is cloud cuckoo land, to be quite frank. It really is. I just don't see it happening. In the other areas, I don't think there was any commitment to ban the fur trade. I think they were playing with the issue because it sort of, you know, played to certain demographic voter groups, but I don't think there's any commitment to do it. I think the people like Rees-Mogg and Ben Wallace in the cabinet have made clear that issue of free trade and we shouldn't be preventing people, you know, using fur. We know Wallace wants to keep the use of bear fur hats for the military, so that's all got brought into this debate as well. There's no question about it. Foie gras, freedom of choice. I'm sure Rees-Mogg and his friends want to go down the Carlton Club and stuff their throats with foie gras and don't want to be told they can't eat it. So we know that's going on as well. It's a great shame about the advertising of, you know, exploitive advertising, animal attractions abroad, elephant rides. Yeah, all of this is horrible. Yeah. And I don't think the government have got any appetite for pursuing it. I think what's so dreadful about a lot of this is that they've played people along, that they've led everyone to believe that they're committed to it. They've gained a lot of support in 2019 at the election. They've carried support with them even through all the terrible things that have gone on over the last few years. There are some people that still stick with them on the basis, well, Carrie Johnson's in Downing Street. Boris said this about animals. He's got Dylan the dog, Zach Goldsmith's around. It's got to be better than it is. Surely we'll get something. Well, I think most of this is over. You know, Zach was in Singapore when this was announced yesterday. Carrie's nowhere to be seen.
You
can draw your own conclusions from that.
Do you think conservation organisations made a mistake in trusting the Conservative government in the first place?
I think there was optimism, and I played that card as well. I've spoken to you a lot about the fact that I thought there were certain people in this government that were different, that were making a difference to the thought process and the policy development. And for a period of time, I most definitely thought that was the case up to about 6 months ago. I was still pretty confident that it could be delivered. But that was before Partygate, falling poll ratings, you know, Prime Minister in real trouble. And suddenly what he needed to do was shore up his right-wing base to keep him in power. When that happens, that's the point when you really know if this is something that's going to be delivered on or not. And he basically threw it away very quickly. The minute he was told by people like Rees-Mogg and told by people like Ben Wallace, if you want to keep your job, you start dumping all this stuff. And not only that, you've got an issue here about the influence of your wife. You've got all the NOWSAD fallout. And I'm part of that. And I'm clear about it. We are where we are. That's historical fact now, though. And that's not over. That debate will go on. But it has soured all of this. What it has done is made it at times look like the Prime Minister has been influenced by his wife to take decisions that he wouldn't normally take. You know, we might hear more about that on Badgers in weeks to come, because we've got this growing controversy over the peer-reviewed data that's been published recently in the Vet Record, and a recognition that probably back in 2019, when those badger call licenses were pulled from Derbyshire, the whole policy should have been ended then.
When
the Prime Minister intervened, it didn't. And it's gone on, and far more badgers have died unnecessarily. So I think when historians look back, there'll be this pressure point, and it blew. It's noticeable that Carrie is nowhere to be seen anywhere at the moment. She's just not visible. In the past, she was talking to journalists and indicating that she was behind things, and the Mail would write stories, or the Telegraph or Helena Horton, these journalists would put stuff out. It's just not happening. So clearly that sort of line of communication has just dropped away as well.
I do find it odd that Johnson is being told by his own MPs that supporting animal welfare legislation will cost him their votes and therefore put his job at risk, when recent polling commissioned by Humane Society International found that 72% of voters, you know, those are the people who decide whether the entire party keep their jobs, would like to see the UK government pass more laws designed to improve animal welfare and protect animals from cruelty. And more specifically, 77% agreed that the UK government should ban the import of animal-derived products like fur for which the farming and production methods are banned in the UK already.
I think they're obsessed by the red wall seats in the north of England. And there's other commentators that they've become completely obsessed by that and actually forgotten the rest of the population in the country to a degree. In those red wall seats, polling is telling them that these issues don't really resonate with a lot of voters. They're not that important to them. Okay, so that's where this is coming from. In Downing Street, they're being told that people in red wall seats that they took from Labour at the last election are not too concerned about foie gras, about fur, or about trophy hunting. To them, it's all about the economy, it's about immigration, it's about those issues. And they've got to be tough. Hence, you send, you know, immigrants to Rwanda, you've got to come up with more means of shoring up the economy. There are certain things they're doing to pander to that, what they believe. And I'm not saying it's a majority of people in those seats, but there is the people that have voted or decided to change their vote at the last election. Will they stay with the party? That's what this is about. So he's willing to risk everything on just holding on to those seats. And interestingly enough, in the local council elections, of course, they did terribly in London. They didn't do well in certain parts of the Midlands. Obviously, did terrible in Scotland. But in those northern seats, they held their ground, or in some cases made up some lost ground. So there's no sign that it's all collapsing yet. And everything is now being put on that. All cards are being put on that bet. So, you know, that reflects, I think, the policy of the government. Everything between now and polling day will reflect that. And this doesn't fit into that sort of calculation politically.
Which I find really strange, because you can do all those other policies. I wouldn't, but you can do the strict immigration policies and you can still ban fur. I mean, what difference does it make?
No, I agree. Goldsmith got very worried a few months ago about losing certain aspects of this legislation and reached out to people, including me and others, to help to try and sort of keep it on track. But obviously he's pretty much been pushed to one side. And he hasn't got the influence that maybe he felt he had once before, you know, earlier on in this administration with the line into Carey and to Johnson. I think that's all fallen away. So he doesn't have the influence. He's been pretty much packaged out now as an ambassador on environment issues to wander around the world, which I'm sure he finds quite interesting. Literally, he's being kept out of Westminster politics completely, sent abroad constantly, you know, to far off places while the Prime Minister just clears the decks on this stuff. I think that's, you know, shows where the power is, you know. And whoever's going to compete for the leadership, and there's no certainty in my mind that Boris Johnson will be prime minister at the next election, next year or 18 months away, realistically. So if they're going to change, they're going to have to change relatively quickly. And the contenders for that position, I think, will put real clear water between themselves and this agenda that was seen as his wife's agenda, not theirs. And I think this is just sort of preparing the ground for them just to say, this is not the agenda I want to follow. It's not the conservative agenda. It's not what we need to do. And leave this to the Greens or Liberal Democrats or Labour. They want to placate these people, but we don't need the animal rights movement. We don't want it. It's not, you know, in line with conservative principles. In fact, it's running up against conservative principles to a degree.
Okay, so what's the solution then? A political Green alliance? People like the Greens, the Lib Dems, the SNP, they have to.
I think it's
together.
Not just good to say an alliance, because if you get an alliance, the parties have got nothing to show for it, because you're in a real danger here that once this falls away from the Tories' agenda, it will not be picked up by Labour, Liberal Democrats, or SNP to a large degree. So it will fall away completely. You know, this agenda will just largely disappear from our domestic politics. So I think what we've got to do is to say to the Labour Party, we want you to put together, well in advance of an election, a very robust animal welfare manifesto that picks up all the issues here and adds more in that people want to see action on for animal protection in Britain and around the world. And we want the other parties then, if they form a coalition with you, to actually sign up to that as well. Effectively, so that if, you know, they come into coalition, the SNP or Liberal Democrats will have to be signed up to what you've committed to. That's what we should now be working on as animal welfare organisations, with some urgency, I would say, if we believe that these things should be delivered on and we're concerned that the government have failed. Because otherwise, there's no good as sort of crying over, you know, spilt milk, just saying, oh, Boris has betrayed us. It's not going to change anything.
There has to be a response.
Has to be a response to it. And I think it's got to be robust. I think it's got to be tough. I think it's got to be in line with public opinion. And I think we've got to be really hard on Keir Starmer, particularly in the Labour leadership, which at the moment have not shown much appetite. Jim Mahon has shown no interest in this at all. He spent all his time as Shadow Environment Secretary placating the National Farmers Union. That's a problem. He clearly feels that's what they need to do. It's presumably being told by the leader of the Labour Party that's what they should do if they're going to win these rural votes and things that they've lost ground on. We've got to say no, actually. The farming industry has a voice, but it's not going to have a control over this. You're not going to make the same mistakes the Conservatives have made. No more badger culling. We need clear commitments on animal welfare and wildlife protection at home and abroad. We want to see the Labour Party stand by those.
Yeah.
So yeah we've got work to do, because this is not natural territory for people like Jim Mahon. It's definitely not natural territory for people like Keir Starmer either, to be quite honest.
So it is entirely up to us to prove that it needs to be their natural territory because there are votes in it. So we need to be vocal. We need to keep pushing on this the whole time.
Yeah, the polling is really important on voting intentions. I think what the NGOs should all be doing is putting more money into polling to show that actually the public will make decisions on voting. And go back to 2017 election on the fox hunting, on the ivory trade, on the issues that we know cost Theresa May so dearly. We need to go back over that and say, listen, don't make the same mistake that she made. You know, you need to think about how these issues will play out at the electorate. Ultimately, by the time the Tories go back to the polls in 2023 or four, they won't have much to stand on in terms of delivery on animal welfare. You know, there'll be a few things. Animal sentience bill, where they had no options but to do something on those grounds, leaving the EU anyway. And to be quite honest, it doesn't really give us anything that you wouldn't have got within the EU itself. And there are lots of question marks about what it means. You know, some domestic measures on puppy smuggling and things, but not a great deal, to be quite frank. There's not much there at all.
No.
You know, I couldn't give you some real strong legislative proposals and implementation. The Ivory Act's taken years to get on the statute books. It's just about ready to go now after legal challenges and everything. And even then, there are questions about how far wide-ranging it should be. Should it cover mammoth ivory? Should it cover narwhal ivory? Should it cover hippo ivory? So there's lots more things to be dealt with on that as well. But that's pretty much it. That is pretty much it. There's nothing else. So when you think about it, it's pretty appalling, really, for all the promise that you were given, all the ideas, you know. Oh, yeah, there's glue traps is coming through now, but that's been pushed at devolved level as well as UK level.
Yeah.
But there's not much else. There's no closed season for the shooting of hares. There's no ban on the fur trade, no ban on foie gras. Live animal exports is still on the agenda, but hasn't been delivered on. Trophy hunting still on the agenda, but not delivered on. People still own primates under certain license conditions in their homes. So there's not much there. There's not much there. Ultimately, Boris Johnson was never committed to it. Never. Even though his father was interested, even though his wife now is committed to it, it's not been enough to keep him committed to it when the cards are stacked against him politically.
How unusual for Boris Johnson not to keep a promise.
Exactly. And shouldn't we all know it at the end of the day? Because that's just the sort of person we're dealing with, I'm afraid. So disappointment, but I think we should all pick ourselves up and say we're more and more determined than ever that if the Conservatives are not going to do this, then the other parties need to take it seriously if they're going to be looking for our vote at the next election.
Yeah, fine. For what it's worth, you and I will keep banging on about this as often as we possibly can.
Absolutely.
We will not let it drop.
No, we won't, Charlie.
Cheers, Dominic.
Not at all.
Thank you for listening. For more blogs and audio on wildlife, animal rights, and the environment, please go to offtheleash.substack.com. And if you'd like to comment or contact us, you can leave us a message on Substack or on our Twitter feeds at Charlie Moores and at Dom Dyer 70.